We're happy to make podcasts available for selected EdWebinars for your listening pleasure. If you'd like to receive a CE certificate, you must watch the video recording and take the corresponding CE quiz. Recordings and quizzes can be found in the EdWebinar archives. Please visit home.edweb.net/podcasts for more information.
Good afternoon, and welcome to this wonderful professional learning opportunity presented by CEDA and our friends here at EdWeb. Today, our topic is the professional learning in action, evidence-based practices for student success. And I know that is a topic that we can all get behind. And I am Candace Dotson, your executive director of CEDA. Talk a little bit more about me in a minute. And I am joined today and thrilled to have colleagues from the state of Ohio, where they work in education at the Office of Research and also in federal programs. And we'll let them talk a little bit more about their roles. But they're going to be sharing with us today some of the things happening in Ohio that I think everyone's going to learn a lot about and can make some really good connections. And I always feel like we're all smarter when we're together. So, and we share our practice. The other thing is, this is all about, like today is this kind of a whole series of webinars that we've been doing as part of being a member of our Title IIA community. So again, as I said earlier, you know, I really do believe in collaboration and knowing that we all are doing the best we can with the resources we have, and we have great stories and we have many challenges. So when we all come together in communities, we're able to like share resources, ask questions of colleagues, and really learn from each other. And that's what's best ultimately for student learning. So we definitely want to invite you to join our community. And by doing that, you can be part of these webinars and also participate in other online discussions and get free resources. So we want to make sure that you take the opportunity to log in either through EdWeb or definitely through CEDA and join our community. So I am, again, as you see on the screen, Candace Dotson. I am the executive director of CEDA, and CEDA is an organization that represents state members from all of our departments of education and a lot of our provinces. And we have affiliate members and lots of strategic partners all working together to really leverage technology and for learning. And digital tools and all the different kind of communications and collaborations that make learning interesting in today's classrooms and beyond the classrooms. So CEDA has a very interesting role in that by helping our state leaders help our school districts to do that well and connect with wonderful models and resources and companies and affiliates all across the U.S. and really beyond that to get that done. So I am, again, the executive director for 3 months now. I come from Indiana, where I live, and I was working at the Department of Ed there. But I've also been an elementary school teacher, a media specialist, a building level administrator, a district administrator, and an ed tech coach. So I've walked in a few of probably your footsteps and actually just a very passionate about learning. So the agenda today that you can see, we'll have these introductions talking a little bit, I've already mentioned about the Title II Part A digital community and CEDA, but then we're going to be the really good part of today, not me, is the state perspective and bringing in our friends from Ohio to talk about what's happening there and how you can learn more about what they're doing. And then we'll have some time for questions and answers at the end, where we'll go up to the questions that you've been posting, take some time to answer those. So please do use that question format at the top to do that. So again, a little bit about CEDA. We are a nonprofit and we do serve all of the US state and territorial leaders. And we really just work in all different kinds of ways around resources, connecting, professional learning. We put out a lot of great resources policy all around using technology for learning. And we have many state leaders. We also have affiliates, other organizations that work closely with us to get this work done. And we have private sector partners. We have so many companies out there trying to build excellent tools and platforms and things to assist in learning today. And CETA does a great job of working with those companies, not only just around products, but around what is good practice in the educational space. So that's part of who CETA is. And again, we have lots of resources, some of which can be very relevant to you if you're in the classroom or in an administrative role. We have things that will help you understand the role of digital learning. We have support materials, things about infrastructure. So you want to be sure to visit the CETA website, and you can have links to all of our resources and other places. So why CETA and Title IIA? A lot of our state leaders had come to us, and many of them were acting with the Title IIA hat on in their state. If that wasn't their specific role, they were definitely working within other members of state departments or affiliate organizations, because again, we're ultimately all there trying to figure out how do we best support this shift to digital learning. And so it was a natural fit for CETA to say, gosh, you know, we would love to host and help bring people together in that space to learn more, to find resources. And we've been really lucky with support from the Bill and Melinda Gates Foundation to be able to start this community and start to create resources. We're always looking for ways to help. So, you know, please do feel free to reach out to some of us, and you can find CETA contacts through this, but also on our website, and let us know if there are ways in which you would like to see more resources and conversations happen. So today, again, as I said at the top of the hour, is professional learning leveraging Title IIA, but we're really looking for effective practices, which is something we know that the federal government is always wanting us to be accountable to with our title monies. So that is part of today, but we want to encourage you beyond today's webinar to join our Title IIA community and participate in lots of ways beyond just these webinars. So we are thrilled to partner with EdWeb for this, and again, with the funding that we get for Bill and Melinda Gates. So please be a part of our community and join us. So really excited today to welcome, while I am the executive director of a national organization, my home is in the state of Indiana. So next door to me and my neighbors to the east are Ohio. And so today our experts come from Ohio. So I am joined today, and you are in your learning, by Eben Dowell, who is a senior research analyst in the Office of Research, Evaluation, and Advanced Analytics at the Ohio Department of Ed. That is a lot of a title, Eben, and I'm excited to hear you sharing that. I used to say in Indiana that I wasn't from the office assessment, so I wasn't there to actually hold anyone accountable, but I guess you can't really say that. So anyway, we'll let you have a moment in a second to tell us more about you. And also with Eben is Diane Neal, who has, like me, many years in education and has joined the Ohio Department of Education in the Office of Federal Programs. And she's the assistant director in that area and is going to talk a lot today about just, you know, what does that look like and what does it mean to really utilize those federal programs and how do we do what's right for kids? So I'm excited to hear what they're going to be able to share with us. So without any more further ado, I'm going to look to Eben and turn it over to you to share Empowered by Evidence.
Great. I'll bump Diane over here for a second. Good afternoon, everybody. And it sounds like there are a lot of somebodies on this afternoon. We really appreciate that. I'm very happy to have this opportunity to share with you Ohio's experience in our Empowered by Evidence initiative. In Ohio, we've been putting a lot of time and energy into this project because we do truly believe that there's inherent value in using data and research in education. And for us, that means that we want to think bigger than just meeting the minimum requirements of Every Student Succeeds Act. What we really want to do is think about how we can support our districts as well as our SEA staff and building their own capacity to carry out research and use research in their work. So I'd like to begin by sharing a little bit about where we started. And kind of the gist of this slide is that we did not have any intention of going it alone as we jumped into the evidence-based lake. So Ohio, we wrote into our ESSA plan that we would build an evidence-based clearinghouse, which seemed like a perfectly reasonable idea at the time. But as we sat down to think about how we would actually carry this out, we realized that we needed to build our internal capacity, both for understanding the evidence levels as well as being informed on all the existing resources that were out there. And so REL Midwest, or the Regional Education Laboratory that serves Ohio, was our first partner in this initiative. And what they did was they coached our staff on the ESSA definitions, which many of you probably have familiarity with and realize are, you know, somewhat more complex than may first meet the eye. And REL Midwest also produced for us an integral tool for building our clearinghouse, and I'll describe that tool a little further later. We then partnered with a second organization, the Ohio Education Research Center, based at the Ohio State University. And with the department's input, OERC actually built the clearinghouse, and they host the clearinghouse, and they did the work to initially populate it with its first set of strategies. So these next few slides, we're going to get a little bit into how we discuss evidence-based strategies with the field. And the idea of evidence-based has been around for some time, you know, definitely predates ESSA. These types of strategies have gone by scientifically based, by research based, and the foundations are from the medical profession, where the notable definition in the med profession is the conscientious, explicit, and judicious use of current best evidence in making decisions. And in the education world, we know that ESSA raised the bar by providing some fairly specific definitions about what it means to have good evidence of your success. And we like to make sure whenever we're talking with the field about defining evidence-based strategies, that they are foremost a reason to have confidence that the things that you're doing are likely to have their intended effects. And so why do evidence-based strategies matter? As I'm sure almost all districts will agree, their discretionary spending is limited, and making wise and impactful choices is very vital. And also most will agree that it's quite difficult to make up for lost time and lost opportunities in a child's education. So we believe that evidence-based strategies they're an important way for us to all together to honor the responsibility of doing what's possible now to improve the odds of our student success. And further, we found that the evidence-based conversation helps us to dispel some of those untested assumptions that are common in the field, but that might not be serving our students to the highest degree possible. And toward that end, the evidence-based mindset offers some sensible self-reflection type of questions that are helpful for breaking some of these old tropes and some of these points of discouragement. So maybe you've come across some of these in your work. We often hear, we've always done it this way. And so we might respond, yes, but are we seeing the improvements we expected? And if not, why? You also commonly hear, everyone believes this works. But we might say, but how do we know for sure? And what do the data tell us about how well it is working? And then lastly, and regrettably, you often do hear that we've tried everything and nothing seems to work. And that's where evidence-based strategies kind of force you to think about if you've thoroughly looked at all the proven approaches that are out there. So to help develop an evidence-based mindset in our state, we've boiled down our highest level guidance to these five steps, which are particularly relevant to districts that have not had a history of analyzing their local needs or evaluating programs. And our slides up until now have pretty much discussed that first step, the understanding and appreciating the evidence-based approach. What we'll do is in the remaining slides, or at least my remaining slides, we'll touch on some of these other factors, such as considering your local needs, learning the basics about the ESSA levels of evidence, making your strategies prove their worth, and tapping into Ohio's new resources. And in particular, we're referring to Ohio's Clearinghouse with that one. So today, we'll assume you do have some degree of familiarity with the ESSA evidence levels. So I won't go into great detail here. Both our webpage and the Clearinghouse site do offer some easy to digest resources on these definitions. And you may have noticed in Ohio, we like to discuss these as levels rather than tiers, and that's mainly to avoid confusion in that the term tier has been used with some other things like our tiers of support in Ohio. Two basic things that I would like to emphasize today, sort of as a reminder, is that the ESSA levels are based mainly on the design and outcomes of evaluations. And these levels convey confidence in, not amount of, the positive effects. And the lowest level demonstrates a rationale, level 4, is somewhat interesting in that states have discretion to approach this level in different ways. And the way that we're looking at it in Ohio is it's a chance for us to encourage districts to innovate and contribute to the knowledge base, to the evidence base. And we're also aware that there's going to be some areas where there just isn't good evidence that's been built up based on a recent grant carried out by the state. We found that there are many evidence-based strategies for improving literacy in the early grades, but many fewer at the high school level. Whenever we talk about evidence-based strategies, particularly selecting those strategies, we like to couch the conversation in the fact that this selection is just one part of the cycle of continuous improvement. And this also offers us an opportunity to remind people that we have many resources out there about carrying out the Ohio improvement process. And one of the most important takeaways, I think, from this slide is that if you have not conducted a robust needs assessment, as mentioned in step 1, you might not be equipped to choose an evidence-based strategy that meets the particular needs of your students. And we think when taken in total, this full cycle that we have in Ohio does provide a convenient framework for districts to choose, implement, and judge the effectiveness of their evidence-based strategies in an ongoing way. And not surprisingly, there are of course many factors beyond the ESSA definition that districts have to take in mind when choosing strategies, and I'm very sure this is only a partial list. By way of example, if you've identified a strategy that looks really good, has great evidence, it's a level 1, but the cost implications are just that you would have trouble implementing it with fidelity or sustaining it more than a couple years, you might be better served to look at an effective level 3 intervention that might not have those same cost inhibitions. And as another example, if your teachers or your community are not likely to buy in to a particular strategy, one that might be favored by the administration, it doesn't necessarily matter how much evidence is available. It's likely not to succeed in your local context. So in a nutshell, you just need to be sure that the logistics present in your district are able to support the strategy that you choose. And we do, we have a full tutorial for how to use Ohio's evidence-based clearinghouse online. So I just want to give you a little brief overview today. And we mentioned here that use of Ohio's clearinghouse is not required by any, but is available to all. That is to say that some districts and schools are required to choose evidence-based strategies, but they are not required to choose those that are captured within the warehouse. They can identify those from any source that they choose. But we also believe that this clearinghouse is useful not only to those who are, for instance, have an improvement status identified, even for any district that is choosing to carry out continuous improvement. Also, I had mentioned earlier that REL Midwest had provided a vital piece to our puzzle. And what they did was they prepared crosswalks for us that helped to translate the existing ratings in other clearinghouses into the ESSA levels. So with these crosswalks, Ohio State was able to easily translate many of the different ratings and populate our current warehouse. This slide is just to give you a brief overview of the types of filters that you can apply when searching for strategies within our clearinghouse. Currently, we have four different content focus areas, and that's going to be a big part of our work in the year ahead, is to add additional focus areas. And I think most of the different areas that you see along the left side there are pretty intuitive. I'll mention that the district typology, that refers to our rural to urban continuum of district settings. And resource type refers to strategies that are identified in evaluations versus those that may be identified in more meta studies of the existing research. And we'll also show you what the results look like of a search. So each of the strategies that meets your search criteria will come up with its own individual card, which indicates the ESSA level that it meets, a brief description of the strategy and some of its key characteristics. And if you click on Learn More, then you can get a more in-depth description as well as information on the original source of the strategy if it was curated from another existing clearinghouse. And then along the left side there, you can see once you're into the results, you can continue to further filter down by adding or taking away criteria. And this brings us to where we're going from here. So we're quite pleased with the way that Ohio's evidence-based clearinghouse is shaping up, but we know it has a lot of room to grow. Mentioned that we're going to be adding some additional content areas. First up is behavioral health, and then we're also going to be looking at education technology and early childhood education. We've also convened a research review team made up of state and national researchers and practitioners to help us. They're going to help us figure out a system for reviewing and adding additional resources that may not already appear in other clearinghouses that we may want to add to Ohio's clearinghouse. And they'll also help us work through some of the stickier issues that are sure to arise in a big project like this. And finally, I'll just mention that we also want to continue helping to build the base of evidence. We're a pretty active state when it comes to supporting external researcher work for those who might want to leverage our longitudinal student database and our educator data. So we want to continue to be active in that way, as well as expand on the ways that we can help our districts carry out their own research and apply the other existing research.
So my name is Dr. Diane Neal, and I am with the Office of Federal Programs, and we get the fun side of evidence-based. We have to look at how are we going to monitor this? Or do I?
You can just sit there. There you go.
So we've had, you know, ESSA came into law in December 2015. And it's been a challenge for us in our office to think about how are we going to monitor whether or not the improvement and the intervention strategies are evidence-based that the districts are implementing and using their federal funds for. Last year was the first year that we actually, through our monitoring process, really started looking at evidence-based as we went out to the districts. Our clearinghouse became available for them to use. We had updated our monitoring system. We have an online monitoring system that you can see here that districts go in and all of the compliance items are in there, and they can upload their evidence or their data for us to review. We have in Ohio, through our monitoring process, a three-tier system based on risk factors for districts. And so some districts will be just on a self-survey, and it's really, like I tell them, it's an honor system. You go in, you look at the compliance system and the items that you're supposed to have to demonstrate your evidence, and you check off your list. Others are on a desk review or they have an on-site. So last year was the first year in the process of monitoring during the desk review and the on-site that we actually started looking at evidence-based for districts. So in ESSA, you can see reference to evidence-based in Title I, in Title II, Title III, and Title IV. What we did from our office is first went through all of our systems that we have where evidence-based is referred to, updated the language. And I know Evan had referred to it earlier that, you know, evidence-based isn't really new. I remember when prior to No Child Left Behind, I'm telling my age here, it was research-based. And then with No Child Left Behind, it became scientifically-based research. And now here we are with ESSA, and now it's evidence-based. So we've gone in, and in the planning tool, or where the districts go in and they put their plan in, everywhere that it in the LEA plan where it signifies evidence-based, we have a link there for them that will link to Ohio's evidence-based pages on our webpage for them. So they can go right in and see the different levels, and they can get to the clearinghouse if they need to while they're in the planning tool. We also have that in our funding applications then for each of the grants for the different activities where it specifically says in ESSA that it needs to be an evidence-based. We've highlighted that evidence-based for them, and if they click on it, it will go to Ohio's webpage for evidence-based for them. And then finally, we also have it in the compliance system. So everywhere that evidence-based is in part of the compliance rule, we've highlighted evidence-based. If they click on the blue link there, it goes to the evidence-based levels for them and the different levels that they need to have. But finally, it's what do we do as far as monitoring? I mean, this is so new for so many of them because teachers and many administrators, they're not researchers. And the whole idea of evidence-based, and then when you look at the different levels and you get into the type of experimental studies that are supposed to be involved in the different levels, can be rather overwhelming to them. And they can feel as if they're not really qualified for that part of it. Another piece of it is we want our schools, though, to be thoughtful about what they're doing, about the strategies and the interventions that they're implementing in their district. So we want to provide, through our monitoring process, a system that really encourages that thoughtfulness on their side. And then the last piece is we've noticed that if with all the clearinghouses, many of the evidence-based research that's out there is specifically around programs. It's hard to find an evidence-based level for, let's say, using Venn diagrams in your instructional practices, which we all know that that was one of the works of Marzano. And often that might be the strategy, you know, improving instructional practices that a district will have. Well, how do they get to the point where what's the evidence-based for the instructional practices that you've chosen this year you want your teachers to focus on in the classroom? And that's one reason why we're really glad that Ohio has decided not to tell districts, well, you can't do a level four, because then we really would be pushing them into purchasing programs often just so they could show they're evidence-based. And not really actively looking at evaluating what they're doing in their own district and how those are working, or even looking at effective instructional practices. Because we all know it's not one program that's really going to address all the issues that a teacher has in her classroom and make all students succeed. It's often many different pieces that have to come together in an instructional environment so that students can be successful. So the last piece is what we've done is we've created just, it's a form that we've asked districts to use when we're going through the monitoring process. So list what are your improvement and intervention strategies that you're implementing in your district to make improvement. And this is for all districts, not just districts that have a label or identified in Ohio support system. It's all districts who are receiving federal dollars, because that is the crux of federal funds, are to improve educational outcomes for all students. So we've asked them to do that. And then what level of evidence is it at? And then to cite their research that they looked at when they made the decision to utilize this strategy or this program. And of course, if it was on Ohio's clearinghouse, that's sufficient, or the What Works clearinghouse, but often they're not finding what they're using there. Some of them are using John Hattie's work and visual learning and the effect size, but at this point, Ohio, we haven't gotten into Hattie's work with the visible learning that does get into more of the instructional strategies or practices and processes that are used in education to see if they're effective or not. And then finally, through what fund are they using to provide that intervention, an improvement? This has allowed us to really, through our monitoring process, provide the type of support and technical assistance to districts. So as we've gone through this year and we've done desk reviews and on-sites with districts, I can tell you that we've not issued any findings. That was our first decision from Ohio Department of Ed on that. What we really want to do is lead districts to where they feel more comfortable on really digging through all of this new information that's available there with evidence-based. So we provide them the form. We ask them to list what they're doing. We show them the resources. We guide them to those resources on Ohio's webpage and to the clearinghouse, and then to other resources such as the What Works clearinghouse to use. And if they're doing a level four, which many of them are, then we guide them to Ohio's on the clearinghouse. You'll see that there is a logic model. So there's a form for them to complete to decide how are we going to evaluate whether or not this has been effective, so that they, you know, their hands aren't tied. They do have an opportunity to use things that may not be certainly at a level one, two, or three, but yet they can engage then in really evaluating whether or not in their district, in their situation, and in the context that they have, is it working? Now, where do we go from here now? One of the things that we're going to continue to do is provide technical assistance in this area until we feel as if districts really have a good grasp of this and that really the materials that they need and the information that they need has really been communicated and they all understand it. We're not ready to start saying, oh, you don't, you know, you haven't, you don't, you're not using evidence-based yet. What we're doing is asking them update your forms.
I hear you.
Okay, good. I went out a little bit here. Update your forms annually. And then when we go into the district, we've asked, so how did you come to the decision that of this level, if it's not, you know, in our clearinghouse or any other clearinghouse for a level? Because what we really want to do is really guide them through that process of looking at the decisions that they made and what evidence they looked at to make that decision. And then how are you going to evaluate it then? Which really ties into an important piece of ESSA, which is evaluation. Instead of doing what we've always done, do we have a system in place? Do we have a mechanism where we're really evaluating regularly if what we're doing is working? And so that's where we're going with our monitoring of it, is not only looking, do they have it? Have they checked for the evidence? But how are you evaluating it? And what does that tell you at this point? So, do we have...
I learned a lot about your work there.
Thank you. Well, thank you, Evan.
I appreciate both of you sharing. Let me turn my video back on. I forgot to do that. There I am. So I guess I want to go back. There's been some questions posted. I don't know, Evan, I know Diane was talking. I don't know if you had a chance to look at some of those, but I guess I can just kind of call them out and see if you have some things that you would add. One thing I wanted to ask right away is maybe you could talk just a little bit about how stakeholders participated in the whole process. Like, how did you make sure different stakeholders were represented in this work? Can you talk about that just briefly a little bit? Like in the development of this, like, you know, what was your process? How did you go about getting all the, like, what stakeholders were actually involved?
Yeah, you know, honestly, in the actual creation, like the design of the clearinghouse,
yeah.
I wouldn't claim that we had broad stakeholder input in that. I mean, I feel like we brought in expertise from several quarters to help us carry it out. And then we did do a good bit of piloting to make sure that the, you know, the interface made sense to our districts. And there were some refinements that happened with a couple rounds of usability testing. But that's one area that we'd like to get into with our research review team that we've convened, which is a very experienced panel of both like local and national people, to get into some of those considerations about audiences that we may not have considered in the initial design.
Yeah, I think that's always, and that's good that you're doing that. Because I do think I've seen in some of the work I've done too, you know, many times, you know, can be simply as if it's not something that's easy in navigation to use, if there takes too much, if the learning curve's too high on that part of it, then it, as we all know, as educators, our time is so limited. So I think it's really great that you're, you know, getting expertise, but then being willing to refine that as kind of things go on, because that is kind of interesting to that. Go ahead.
Oh, I'm sorry. Yeah, I would just also like to mention, I don't want to undersell the effort of the department. My director, Dr. Heather Boughton in particular, has designed quite a bit of media that's out there to help you know, develop the evidence-based mindset with our districts and approaching, you know, the question of, you know, how you, particularly around like level four stuff, how you design projects and evaluate projects. So I think the Clearinghouse itself hasn't necessarily engaged stakeholders, but we've tried to involve people in a broader discussion of what evidence-based can mean in the big picture.
So one more question I have, and then I want to make sure I'm looking at the questions that were here. I know maybe you guys can see there was a question about the last slide. It says a brief summary, if you could, of the third column. So you might want to go back to that. That obviously might have been what Diane was talking about. I wanted to know a little bit about, you mentioned, you know, not underselling the department's work in different areas, not just, you know, specifically with the Clearinghouse, but like, how do you make sure, how do you in Ohio make sure that, or do you, that there's cross collaboration between title groups? Like, is that, do you find that difficult, or what's a way that you do that? So that was one of my questions. And then also, you know, what does all of this truly mean to a teacher? So a teacher's out there in the classroom, how do they really, you know, what would be their first steps and why would they utilize this? And can you, I know you kind of touched on that and I hear it, especially from a DOE kind of perspective, but can you talk a little bit more about that from a practitioner's point? But then also, how do you make sure that you're crossing over from title program to program and talking to each other? How do you all do that?
So in Ohio, we have it's consolidated applications. So when we go in and do a monitoring, we're going in and we're monitoring all the programs. So that's part of it. When it's not, I just don't go in and look at Title I. So while we're there, we're looking at Title I, Title II, Title III, and Title IV, and their programs, and how do they all integrate, and how do they use their resources that they have from all of those programs to support, you know, their improvement efforts. So I'm not sure if that answered your questions, but that's what we look at for the crossover and the coordination.
And so in Ohio, are your departments, like, are your people divided? Do you have people that just work in Title I and Title II? And then if so, you all go together when you do visits and work very collaborative in that way?
So in our federal programs, we have two teams. We have an operations team and we have a programs team. On the programs team, we do have a lead person and a couple people that work on that team, and they help with a lot of the guidance and the training of everyone else in our office. So everyone in our office has to be familiar and know all of the grants, though, and all of the requirements that are involved in those grants, and all the programs that and activities that would fall underneath each grant. So when we form a team to go, it depends on the size of the district. Sometimes only two people may go for an on-site. Other times when it's a large urban district, we're going to take 10 or 12 people in. We have up to 20 people that work in our office, because we have over 1,000 districts in Ohio. So
that's a big state. I appreciate that. And I feel like that people can feel confident then that people are working together really ultimately for the best interests of students and what's happening to get that. One question that did come up, so I want to go back to the teacher part, but there was a question about how do we measure professional learning impact of teacher practices. So, you know, are you doing something in that area to really measure that? That was a good question, I think, that came up.
I think that was also the item that was on that last slide. One of the things that we require within the planning process for districts is that they have their performance measures. How are you going to measure whether or not what you're doing is successful? And they put those in their plan when they submit those to us. We require that they have a measure for their students or student outcomes based on the strategies that they're using. But we also require that they have an adult implementation measure. So the districts determine their adopt measures, but we know that it's not until we actually address adopt behavior and what adults are doing that we're really going to see the results that we want with the student outcome. So that's one of the measures that we have districts put in the plans. And that's the measures that when we go back now and we start looking at these evidence-based strategies that they're using, that we're going to say, okay, you had these performance measures. Let's look at those and how are they doing based on these measures that you've identified in your plan.
I see if you see it, the question that just popped up. Can you provide an example of a performance measure that you've seen used? Any come to mind?
Well, some of the districts, for example, I mentioned instructional strategies. So they may have a performance measures that are written as a SMART goal that will say that by 2021, 100% of our teachers will implement this instructional strategy at least so this many times weekly or monthly So then how do they measure that or how do they monitor it? In Ohio, we require districts to have weekly teacher-based team meetings where they are going over their data and they're doing common planning together. So that's how the district and the buildings monitor then those adopt measures.
And that sounds very similar to Indiana practice. Their question is, how is that tied to student academic performance? And is it, is that measure of the implementation of the instructional practices, then I think what they're at, directly correlated then to student performance?
Does it? Are you
finding that out?
Yes, that's why, you've decided you're going to do this instructional practice, that this is how you're as a district, this is your intervention or your improvement practice. Has it resulted in a change in student outcomes? If it's actually being implemented, first you have to make sure it's being implemented. Then are you seeing the student outcomes as a result of it? That's what action research is about. I mean, really, if we really thought about it, when you write a plan, it's part of your hypothesizing. You've looked at your needs. You've done some root cause analysis to figure out why do we think this is happening? And we think that if we do this, it's going to improve this result, this outcome. So now we have to get into the part where we're actually doing the research piece. We're implementing the study, and then we're looking at the results, and we're seeing if it played out. So it really, it's all a hypothesis. It's a theory.
Exactly. So I'm just kind of forwarding those questions, and I think that's a lot of people. It seems like in the chat, I think we're all getting that, and I know I have felt that when I've talked to teachers from various places. So we do sit down, hopefully as a team, maybe as an entire school or a grade level, and take a look at those problems of practice or whatever you want to term them in your area, and then what are we going to do instructionally, and maybe that is at the classroom level, or at the team level, or at the school level, or district level. And then, are we following up? To first of all, I have seen sometimes districts where they have those expectations for instructional change, but they do not follow that with professional learning opportunities. So there's a high level of expectation, not a lot of time or resources spent with educators to truly help them make that change to instruction. But even when they are, then as you said, do they really do it? It's one thing to go to after school meetings or to participate in workshops, but then do you implement it in the classroom, and are we seeing that? And from my point of view too, do our building level administrators know what they're looking for when they are evaluating whether it's being implemented? What does that look like? And are we making sure that our administrators are also being instructed in that? And then ultimately, what happens at the student level? What are students doing? as a result? And then how do we give time at school districts to go back then and really look at that process from the beginning, right? And reflect over the whole thing before we suddenly change practice again. Mm-hmm. So I think, you know, anytime we can call out the evidence base and really put in place expectations and alignment and time and reflection and pieces to make that happen, that's valuable. Because the reality, you know, is a lot of times, or what I've seen, and this is certainly just us talking, is that so many districts, they don't follow through on the whole thing. You know, they get the problem of practice. Maybe they have a couple of workshops. They, you know, it's really takes some time to implement. We have a sense of urgency for our students, but it's interesting to see. I love all that you're doing. That, you know, is really putting an emphasis on, we really need to monitor and make sure that we are trying to have some evidence based. So I think that's really important. I hope that districts are taking that and taking advantage of, gosh, the materials that you have out there for them to use. That's part of it too.
Mm-hmm. I think too, and that's why our office has taken the stand that it has over the next several years. It's really going to be more technical assistance and support on this to get them into using the resources that are available, but also into the processes that if they know that that's something that as we come in for our monitoring visits that we're going to be looking at and we're going to be asking for the data to show that, you know, their adults implemented it and how did it result in student outcome and the conversations, it's going to encourage that process then. And we're doing it without a ding. We're doing it with providing them the support and the encouragement and the expectation, you know, the clarification. This is what is in ESSA. This is what the law says. So what can we do and what can we provide to help you to do this and implement it?
I applaud Ohio for that. You know, we have a lot of expectations that come down from the federal and sometimes they don't surround that with a lot of support. There's an expectation without that. Or I love that you said without the ding, right? You know, we're not out to get you. We're out to support you and wrap you with resources to make this happen. There was a good question from Sandy in the chat that says, have you found that the studies that the vendor has on their websites are reliable? Anything to that point? Do you want to touch that or not?
We'll put a pin in it because that has definitely been identified as one of those sticky questions that I mentioned that we're looking for the advice of our review panel on if we need to handle those types of evaluations in a discrete way that were paid for by the vendor. I think we have come to the conclusion that studies actually carried out by the vendor themselves are not going to be acceptable within Ohio's clearinghouse, but now we're kind of like following the money and seeing if there may be any conflicts of interest or something.
Very true. Sometimes, you know, you have to go with what's out there a little bit, but then have good help your users on the user end to be smart consumers of what it is, right? Like, I think that's part of it too. I don't think it's necessarily you totally disregard it, but you certainly understand where it comes from. So I think we have about 5 minutes until the top of the hour where we'll be stopping. So again, this is my first time to host one of these. It's been wonderful. I want to make sure I allow enough time to say our thank yous. And I just realized I had paused my chat, so missed maybe... see this. I do want to make sure you understand for all of the people that are attending, there is ways to get back to this presentation for those of you who had some technical difficulties or life got in the way of you joining us at the top of the hour. And we certainly get that from an educator's perspective. There are ways to get back to that. And when you join the Title II group, you'll have lots of access to this recording and you can share it with others. So they'll have it and be able to use that. So I want to get to that. I also want to thank very much Diane and Evan for sharing what's going on in Ohio. Very impressive. I don't know that I've seen this. I think this is unique for your state to have kind of your own clearinghouse and the own way of doing this. And I love that you're sharing that practice. I can't say it enough. I really do think we all are stronger and smarter when we work together. This is way too hard of a gig to do in isolation. Teaching is so important and difficult. So we all need to be working together and working smart for that. So thank you both so very much. And again, we thank Bill and Melinda Gates Foundation for supporting this work, for putting their money into actually digging into and supporting educators and administrators and organizations like CETA and so forth, where we are trying again to wrap all of the people on this journey to make student learning the best it can be. We want to be sure that we have the greatest resources, and we thank their Gates Foundation for that. And thank all of you for attending today. We had literally hundreds of people attending from all over the U.S. and actually beyond the U.S., which is very exciting, and we always want to do that. So I know that we are in the process right now of looking to continue to support and grow this Title II community. And I really do sincerely want to hear from people who participate in our community on how we can make it even better. So please reach out. And again, you can find all of our contact information and let us know what you find valuable and the things that we can help you do more of. And also, again, one more time, join the Leveraging Title IIA community and be part of the solution. That is all of it for today. I think we're almost there at the top of the hour. Really appreciate everyone. Thank you, Diane and Evan, and thank you to our friends at EdWeb and for all of you for participating. Have a great rest of the week.
We hope you enjoyed this EdWeb podcast. If you'd like to receive a CE certificate, you must watch the video recording and take the corresponding CE quiz. Recordings and quizzes can be found in the EdWebinar archives. Please visit home.edweb.net/podcasts for more information.